Welcome back for the second hour of Issues Etc. Well, okay, shameless, this isn't self-promotion, this is a plug. I don't have to do it, but I will do it. Just yesterday, I think it was yesterday, the day before yesterday, Jeff brings in, I get books all the time. I mean, they just throw them at me. It's just part of the thing of doing a radio program. And so we get all these books, and most of them honestly end up in the trash, and then the other ones get read, and sometimes we interview the authors. But I got one yesterday that's going to a special place. I already had, in my vast bookshelves downstairs, I'd already scooched some stuff over and left an empty spot amongst the other treasured tomes there for this book, and it's a new hymnal. I got a lot of hymnals. Not all of them are Lutheran. In fact, probably the majority of them aren't. But I had my space set aside for this one. And like all of them, I had a chance to sit there and page through it. And what it struck me as, you know, even if this isn't a book that you would use in church, this would still be a great book just for the individual Christian in their daily devotional life. There's so much packed in there. So now it's sitting here in front of me as a resource. Most people think of hymnals and they think of singing hymns. And they think of that 1 hour in church rather than the other 167 hours of their week. We're going to talk this hour about the hymnal in the Christian's daily devotional life. Dr. Paul Grimm joins us. He's Executive Director of the Commission on Worship for the Lutheran Church of Missouri Synod. The Commission on Worship just published this new hymnal that has that treasured place on my bookshelf, called the Lutheran Service Book. And I guess if I'm really going to be consistent, it shouldn't stay on my shelf. I should have it on my desk and maybe open it occasionally. Dr. Grimm, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Thank you, Todd.
We hear a lot of complaints, especially in Lutheran circles, about the lack of good devotional material out there, good devotional resources. Why don't we usually think of a Christian hymnal as such a resource?
Well, that's a good question. Historically, Lutherans often did view the hymnal as being a source for devotional resources, though I think it was probably applied in rather uneven fashion among from one family to the next. Sometimes maybe the most obvious answer is always right in front of us and we don't even realize it. I think that may be the case in some ways with the hymnal. You know, there are a lot of people, you can talk to folks that are, you know, perhaps in the generation, you know, older than ours that remember learning lots of hymns when they were young, and they've retained a lot of that. Maybe used them even in families as they were in devotions, as they were worshiping together at the end of a day, perhaps after a meal. But in our busy society we now live in, I think people have just sort of lost that opportunity in many ways and just have not seen the hymnals being one of those places where it's marvelous to devotional material is available, even if you can't sing, because there's obviously a lot of things that are connected to music in a hymnal, but that doesn't mean you have to sing them to be able to appreciate and to use them beneficially.
I talked about my grandmother. When we were little, she showed us this little German book and a little leather-bound thing, very well worn. And my dad explained to us that it was her hymnal from her childhood. I think she had received it as a gift when she was confirmed in a Lutheran congregation. And he said that book she carried with her to church because in those days they didn't put it in the pew rack. Everybody owned their own, and it was part of the family's devotional life, too. Tell us a little bit about that aspect of a Christian hymnal's history.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Churches did not initially, they did not provide the copies of a hymnal for people to use when they came to church. You brought your own. This was in the day, of course, when hymnals were very small in size. That little hymnal you're describing is about 3 inches tall, 2 inches wide. There's no music, and that's the reason why you can pack so much in such a small little volume. Once we started putting music into the hymnals, they were too big to put in your pocket to take to church or your purse. And so, you know, the practice came of simply leaving it, having the church buy hymnals to have available there. For a good period of time after that, when those first hymnals came out with music, and then the church, the family still purchased those books in many cases and had them at home, perhaps sitting on the piano rack if they had a piano. But as time went on, less and less of that began to happen. I think just the assumption was that, well, that's the book for in church. That's where we use it in church. And so that's where it stays, and we don't think about using it at home.
So I guess the other thing is when people are thinking, when they hear hymnal, they think hymns. They think page after page of, you know, the old, the new, the bad, and the good, but basically sheet music bound together with words for Christians to sing, whether it's in the home or in church. Is there more to a good Christian hymnal than simply a place to store all your hymns, all your music.
Sure. And in fact, you know, as we wrestled with what title to give this book, we consider that possibility. I mean, does the word hymnal limit it too much to just thinking of hymns? And when we ultimately chose the title Lutheran Service Book, we understood that word service in a very broad sense. Everything that happens within the service of worship, which would include not only singing hymns, but praying prayers, psalms, the portions of the service, the liturgy. I mean, all of those things are part of that. And so one needs to recognize that there's a much broader, it encompasses much more than just the hymns, though that often makes up the bulk of the materials in a worship book. But you have within the hymnal, you know, other services that are used in church, but there are even services that aren't necessarily intended for church that are provided in the hymnals quite often, and certainly we have provided some of those in the Lutheran Service Book so that it can become a resource that's quite useful apart from corporate worship.
It seems the Anglicans never really lost this. I mean, they got a lot of problems. But at least in terms of the way that they taught their faithful to understand Sunday morning, the resource for Sunday morning, and how it's intended simply to be the beginning of everything that happens throughout the week, they've always had, and still do largely, the Book of Common Prayer. And you can find Anglicans who believe this and that, but all of them know, and to one degree or another, practice the Book of Common Prayer. What do they know that we have forgotten?
Well, it depends. I mean, it's partly due to the historical circumstances and just, you know, how they grew up with this whole understanding. I mean, if you open up a Book of Common Prayer, you'll see that the first services that are provided are not the communion services. It's the daily office. In other words, prayers for services for morning prayer, evening prayer, not understood just as, you know, on Sunday morning, but every day of the week, and that understanding that there is morning prayer and evening prayer. And the practice was often had of praying those services, whether you were with a group of people at a church or whether you're simply doing it in your own private devotion. And so they simply had a regular rhythm of prayer that had developed in the course of the development of the Episcopal Church and the Anglican Church, that in some ways we never quite had the same thing. I'm not sure if I could pinpoint where the difference occurred between Lutheranism and Anglicanism, but we have certainly a slightly different focus, I guess.
Well, at the very least, or at least in its form, the Book of Common Prayer for the Anglicans has been a way of encouraging a liturgical life, a life that is in the historic liturgy that goes beyond Sunday morning.
That's right, and that is one thing that we have lost to some degree. I mean, certainly at the time of the Reformation, there was a major upheaval in some ways with worship. Luther retains very much of what the Church had passed on, and yet, in developing the liturgy in the vernacular and the language of the people, it required some major changes. And there's no doubt that probably at the time of the Reformation, it was the new hymns, the opportunity to sing hymns in the language that the people knew, that became a very important sort of motivational or driving force to help to teach the Reformation. And that was certainly one of Luther's primary concerns, was that this Reformation teaching that was now being, you know, continued after Luther had been excommunicated from the Church and they were beginning to build their own evangelical church, that teaching was needed to get down to the people. That's what the catechism were for. But even before Luther developed the catechism in its final form, he had already been writing a number of hymns that was doing that too. And so that teaching of the hymns and the use of the catechism became sort of the primary ways of trying to inculcate the faith in the lives of the people. And that then continued on. But then you get into the 17th century, later 17th century, 18th century, and the whole movement away from corporate worship, the whole pietistic movement you talk about at times, churches, you know, they didn't begin to see the use of services such as this and a liturgical piety that develops from that use is being important. And so then with those things sort of declining in importance, other things show up, and that becomes the types of devotional materials that we even find today, that they're all over the place, but in terms of their theological emphasis and their appropriateness for Lutherans, there seems to be a lot to be desired.
Respond to a couple objections that people have in this day of canned music and big screens and all of the other things that have found their way into Sunday morning when it comes to the use of hymnals and songbooks. Someone's going to say, look, you print it, and even if it only has a life in the church of 25 or 30 years and you're planning on updating it in the future, the minute you print all those things and set them, the liturgies and the prayers and the hymns. You kind of stifle the work of the Spirit in the church. You set those things in concrete, and you stand in the way of Christians truly spontaneously worshiping God.
Yeah, there's a number of ways we can talk about that. Using the church's liturgies and hymns, prayers, all those resources that are provided in a hymnal, are not intended to stifle the work of the Spirit, but in fact, sort of to give room for the Spirit to work. And if we believe and confess that the Holy Spirit works through the means that God has appointed, the Word and the sacraments, the very fact that these services and hymns are so drenched with the Word of God would suggest that indeed this is actually the place where the Spirit can do His work. They're not meant to preclude praying from the heart, as one would do, and there are certainly opportunities and times and the need for that. But quite often, the heart may not know exactly what to pray for, or may not be so paralyzed by some tragedy or whatever else, it doesn't know where to start praying. And it's precisely at those times that to be able to fall back on something that we know is sure and certain, that we've done so many times, or prayed so many times, or sung so many times, we can simply do it and say it, and we've got it there without having to sort of have the heart wrestle and dig down into an empty pit because we've been so racked by a trouble that's come into our lives. And so those hymns and services become a very important source of a starting point, you could say, for allowing us to be able to have that devotional life that can truly draw upon the gifts God gives us in His Word.
Another objection then is also raised, kind of having to do with hymnals as printed material. They're low tech, and hymnals are passe. We have better tools, more efficient tools with which to aid the church, not only in its Sunday morning worship, but in the with the online tools now. Why don't we just put it all online for people in their personal and private devotions, too? So we'll respond to the kind of low-tech criticism.
Sure. There's no doubt that the technological developments that we're experiencing, the dizzying pace at which they come to us, can have some great benefits and uses within worship and even one's devotional life. But, you know, ultimately, turning on and off a screen in a church on a Sunday morning, or even the computer screen on if you're going on the internet to try to find things, you know, you lose a very significant factor. One of the things I call it is it's the thumbing factor. And to be able to take a book and just thumb through it, you're going to bump into things, or they're going to bump into you, whichever way you want to think of it, that you would never have been looking for, or been trying to look for, or wanted to look for. And yet, as you thumb through, you say, oh, what's this about? And you begin to explore, and then you go somewhere else and you explore further, and it opens up worlds that you otherwise would probably not even see or come into contact with, especially with worship on Sunday morning. You know, if the only source of what is used in worship is what's projected on a screen, and nothing is given to you to take home, or there's no book to open, I mean, as soon as the screen is off, it's gone. Now, you may recollect bits and pieces of that, but there's really, it's nothing left for you to really to meditate on, to chew on, and really to mull over during the course of the next days. Whereas if you have a hymnal, you can take what you've heard on Sunday and, you know, look at it on Monday and Tuesday and go other places with that devotional life as you use the hymnal as that main source. So I think there's something about the concreteness of a book and the resources that it provides. It even gives a suggestion of the permanence of what's provided there. I mean, this is something significant enough that we've put it in this low-tech medium, but one that has a very lasting quality to it.
Yeah, kind of like a family photo album. I mean, you'd never say that getting prints of your photos and putting them in a scrapbook or in a family photo album with a little date, and this is where we were, and this is what the kids look like, and here's Christmas 1964. You would never say that stifles family memories or family reminiscence. It, in fact, facilitates it.
Right. And, you know, you can take that analogy and look the other direction with now, you know, with digital photos and the fact that you don't even have to print out any of your pictures, but we still do. And, I mean, you're not going to be able to sit down with your child and just go through those pictures of who this was and who that was or where we were. You know, on the screen, you can do some of that, but it doesn't have the same effect as being actually able to have those pictures in concrete reality that you can look upon.
I was reminded of that in spades, Pastor Grimm, this very week. a rare virus infected my computer, and for about a day and a half, I thought I'd lost every picture I had in there, hundreds of pictures, by the way, and I realized maybe I should print those things off and make a permanent record, lest I lose them, because right now they're just digital impulses. We're talking with Dr. Paul Grimm, Executive Director of the Commission on Worship for the Lutheran Church of Missouri Synod. The Commission on Worship just published a new hymnal called the Lutheran Service Book. We're talking about the hymnal and the Christian's daily devotional life. Our call-in number is 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. Our in-studio email address is issuesetc@kfuo.org. issuesetc@kfuo.org. One more objection for you to respond to while we go into our break here, and that is, look, there's no perfect hymnal. You're never going to be able to make one, print one, that makes everybody happy and that includes everybody's favorite hymns, or that fails to include those that we find objectionable. Respond to the no perfect hymnal objection.
Oh, I spent the last 8 years wrestling with that, as we have had meeting after meeting, deciding things, redeciding things, you know, having different groups over trump other decisions by other groups. There is no perfect hymnal, and this new hymnal that we have prepared, I mean, even I find faults with it, and I've lived with it for 8 years and have been working intimately with it every day. But you know, I mean, not your 25 favorite hymns may not be here, but your 24 or 23 probably are. The point is that, I mean, everyone has slightly different tastes, and when you consider the preparation of a hymnal for not just one person or 10, but 60, 100 congregations, and even beyond that, there's no way, obviously, it can cater to the precise needs of every individual. And within the realm of corporate worship, that doesn't preclude a congregation from using other resources that are faithful to the scriptures and Lutheran confessions. But what this resource provides is sort of a starting point and provides sort of, I don't want to call it a canon, it's something that's closed off in any sense, but it helps to provide like a measuring rod to help one to look at other resources and to say, does it meet up to these standards? Does it proclaim Christ as well as these many resources that are in the hymnal do?
Well, then let's deal with a couple of the other things that a good hymnal are going to contain. Beyond hymns, of course, as a resource for the Christian's daily devotional life, what does a good hymnal need to have in it? What are the bare essentials?
Mm-hmm. I think it's very helpful to have a number of prayers that address a variety of topics. So that a Christian has a place to go for a specific situation that they may need a prayer and to be able to find something that can be at least a starting point again. It's not the only thing you're going to pray, but it becomes a starting point for that devotion or prayer life. Other things are just simple. One of the things I think are important are some very simple orders of worship that can be done individually or with a family, for example. Something that doesn't have to be long, not complicated, but it's simply to the point, provides a direction, a shape in a sense, and perhaps just a few texts that are going to be used each day that begin to serve as sort of that rhythm for prayer. There are other resources. I mean, the creeds, of course, I think have become an important consideration. The Apostles' Creed, for example, historically in the church, and I think I heard Pastor Bender talking about this last week when you were talking about the Nicene Creed, he pointed out that the Apostles' Creed was understood as the baptismal creed. And not used in Sunday morning, really, in any sense in the historic worship of the church, but it was the daily creed, the creed that one returned to every day, because that's the creed, the faith into which we've been baptized into Christ. And so it seems like the creeds are also, I think, important that are provided so that one can truly own those texts and meditate upon them. For Lutherans, I think the small catechism becomes an essential part of a hymnal, which we have included. One can certainly have your own copy of the catechism as well, but here it's provided with the hymnal. And in fact, various resources that we've provided, such as this large group of prayers, these very simple orders of service, the catechism, we've put all those things in the same area so that it sort of becomes the central place one would go to for individual or family worship. And Psalms would be another thing I would suggest, probably. You know, the Book of Common Prayer has always contained the entire Psalter, all 150 Psalms. Lutherans have not traditionally had all the Psalms in the hymnals, but we have 107, I believe, is the number in the new hymnal, which is a fair number, and we tried to be very careful as we chose them so that we chose from among all the various types of Psalms that are included in the Psalter.
Now, one thing I noticed about this, and it may not transfer well to radio because you almost have to see it to understand it. But one thing I've noticed about hymnals, I got a lot of hymnals on my shelf, is they are notoriously hard to navigate, to figure out where you're at. Often page numbers and hymn numbers don't correspond. But tell me if I'm wrong, you might have found a way of solving that problem with the latest offering that you guys put together by way of a Christian hymn of the Lutheran Service Book.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, for our hymnals, at least in the Missouri Synod, we've traditionally had three sets of numbers in a book. You had page numbers, you had psalm numbers, which overlap the page numbers, so you might have Psalm 62 and page 122, and then you had hymn numbers, which all started, each one of those sets of numbers started at one. What we decided to do was to get rid of the duplicated system of numbering and to have simply one set of numbers for the whole book. To do that, it meant we had to put the Psalms first, because I don't think any one of us would dare to suggest we renumber the Psalms. So numbers 1 through 150 are reserved for the Psalms, even though we didn't use quite all of them. Right after 150, the last psalm, you turn to the next page, it's the first of the services, it's the first of the communion services, and that's page 151. And so then through all the services, the numbers just continue. You get to the end where you get these daily prayers and services in the catechism. The last page of the small catechism is page 330. Then the hymns begin, and we simply start with the next number, 331. And that takes us through to 966. And so you can't turn to the wrong place. If you're told to turn, asked to turn to Psalm 72, there's only one place. There's only 172 in the book. The Sanctus is on page 162. There's only one 162 in the book. Or hymn 90 or 922. There's only one place you can go. And so we hope we have sort of taken that confusing numbering system out of the regular complaints that are often heard about hymnals.
When we come back from this break, we're going to continue our conversation with Dr. Paul Grimm, Executive Director of the Commission on Worship for the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. We're talking about the hymnal in the Christian's daily devotional life. Our call-in number is 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. Our in-studio email address, issuesetc@kfuo.org. And then after our conversation concludes, we're going to spend the third hour focusing not only on Warren Jeffs, the guy who was just nabbed by the FBI after sitting on their 10 most wanted list for some time. They found him in a traffic stop, and he's accused of, among other things, practicing polygamy against the law and facilitating statutory rape. We'll find out not only about him from National Public Radio, about his arrest. We'll hear from an ABC News story, one of his former members of his cult, and then we'll hear about the cult itself in the last half hour of Issues, Etc. Our guest will be James Walker of Watchman Fellowship. We'll talk about the Fundamentalist Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. That's coming up later here on Issues, Etc. Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana, is training pastors to enter a church where things are going to change, but the message they preach, the Christ they proclaim, the God they worship, never will change. Men who are equipped to come out and face the 21st century and lead people in the way of the church that's been its way for 21 centuries. And that means the historic worship of the church and the songs and the prayers of the church. Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana, is training Christ-centered, cross-focused pastors. Find out more about them at our website, issuesetc.org. Or call them toll-free, 1-800-481-2155, 1-800-481-2155.
The radio voice of the Lutheran faith for the 21st century. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
Do you want more of God's grace? Village Lutheran Church in Ladue is a Bible-believing church faithful to the Scriptures, a place for the whole family, a community that cares, with a vibrant, historic Christian liturgy. Village Lutheran Church is located at 9237 Clayton Road in Ladue. www.villagelutheranchurch.org. Village Lutheran Church in Ladue, 314-993-1834.
For human tears are older than the rain.
Don't miss Michael Card in concert.
Human tears are older than the rain.
AM 850 KFUO welcomes Michael Card in concert at Zion Lutheran Church Harvester Friday, September 8th, and Zion Lutheran Church Belleville Sunday, September 10th. We've made it easy for you to find out about ticket information. Visit the links on our homepage at KFUO.org. Michael Card in concert.
This is Family News in Focus. I'm Bob Dittmer. Yesterday, the first in a series of pro-gay bills sponsored by homosexual state Senator Sheila Kuhl was signed into law in California. They have a common thread. The bills attack religious freedom. Although it's a serious blow for the pro-family camp, Jessica Stallings reports the battle is not over.
A California bill restricting faith-based organizations became law yesterday in what Karen England with Capital Resource Institute calls a blatant attack on religious freedom.
We are just so disappointed that the governor would sign such a bill that encourages reverse discrimination of people of faith.
SB 1441 requires businesses receiving funds from the state to condone homosexuality, bisexuality, and transsexuality or lose funding. No exceptions for faith-based organizations.
This is so far-reaching that we don't even know what all the ramifications of this bill are going to be.
What we do know is student financial aid, state vouchers for daycare, and other faith-based organizations that interact with the state will be faced with a choice.
So if you're a school that doesn't allow men to dress as women, a private Christian college, you either have to give up receiving students with Cal Grant money or change your code of conduct and your belief system.
Barbara McPherson with the California Family Council says, look out. What happens in California doesn't stay in California.
This is all part of the homosexual caucus's agenda to make sexual orientation and gender identity a protected class under the Constitution. So all the other states in this union had better start paying attention to these bills, because in California we did not.
By Thursday, five other radical pro-gay bills like this one will make their way to the governor's desk for approval. For Family News in Focus, I'm Jessica Stallings.
While there's no pending litigation challenging the new law, pro-family groups like the Alliance Defense Fund say they are ready and willing to step in when a constitutional clash occurs. For Family News in Focus, I'm Bob Dittmer.
On the next Midday Living Jubilee, live at 11:05 on AM 850 KFUO. Join Paul Clayton and me, Diane Summers. We'll talk with Dr. Stephanie Van Ulft, psychiatrist at Heartland Human Services in Effingham, Illinois. We'll talk about the human brain and differences between the sexes and whatever else is on your mind. It's an Ask the Expert. Be sure to phone in while Dr. Stephanie Van Ulft is at your service. It begins at 11:05 on Living Jubilee on AM 850 KFUO.
You can delve into the mind of 16th century reformer Martin Luther with our Issues Etc. Book of the Month for August, titled Luther's World of Thought. How did Luther's mentors and teachers influence him? How did the European class system and political climate help and hinder his reforming efforts? Find out with Luther's World of Thought. For more information, 1-800-325-3040 or issuesetc.org. Luther's World of Thought, our Issues Etc. Book of the Month.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're talking about the hymnal, a Christian hymnal in the Christian's daily devotional life. Dr. Paul Grimm, Executive Director of the Commission on Worship for the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, is our guest. They have produced and published a new hymnal called the Lutheran Service Book. Our call-in number is 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. And our in-studio email address is issuesetc@kfuo.org. A few minutes ago, I was talking about my grandmother, you know, the use of her personal hymnal in the family life. One of the things they used to do in those days, I don't know if my family did it, but I'm sure many families did, especially Christian families, Dr. Grimm, is sing at home. The family sing-along, I think it's safe to say, probably has gone the way of the Brontosaurus in most families. But let's talk about perhaps reviving that old Christian devotional practice, which was opening the hymnal at the family piano and singing a hymn or two.
Well, I have a good story for that one, too. My mother, was when still living at home, she bought a piano. She had learned to play, but they never had a piano at the home. But she bought one after she was graduate from high school and was working. And she and her sister went through the whole hymnal, all 660 hymns in TLH. My mother sang soprano, and my aunt sang alto. Did them all, and I think they started over when they got to the end.
They sang it from cover to cover.
All right.
As part of just family life.
Right, yeah. They were interested. They were there was a curiosity thing in some cases. You know, what's here? And what can we learn that is here that we maybe didn't know before? It's unfortunate. You know, with all of the interest people have in learning more, I mean, searching the Internet and surfing around to find all kinds of stuff, right here in this book there are treasures and surprises that I don't think anybody imagines what's waiting for them.
Well, that means then that a good hymnal, if it's intended for family use as well as use in the church by professional musicians, if you're going to put the music together, somebody's going to have to be able to play it. You can't put music in there that only the aficionado is capable of plinking out on a piano.
Well, and in fact, that raises another issue and a challenge, and that is that we live in a culture that less and less, where we provide our own entertainment, let alone, you know, opportunities to sing in worship in a family. You have fewer people learning how to play an instrument, how to read music, and so it that does present a challenge. But I would say even if those abilities are not present, that does not exclude one from still using the book and from taking some of these hymns and using them as poetry, devotional poetry, because they're wonderful texts that don't have to be sung, though the singing of them provides an opportunity for that, you know, it's a greater enjoyment of them.
Well, I don't... That's where the hymnal finds its place in my devotional life. I do not play the piano in any shape, matter, or form. I read music at the most rudimentary level, and I can sing fine, but I just don't read music. But more often than not, the hymns become prayers, mm-hmm. devotional prayers, just in their texts. Just open it up, read it as a prayer. What do you think?
Oh, I think it's a wonderful opportunity. And, you know, the fact that one of the things music does with a hymn text is that it can help to embed the text more deeply into one's memory, because that combination of melody with the metered rhyme of the text, it just all together helps one to hold on to it better. But most of these hymns are set with regular meters. There's a certain number of syllables per line, and they rhyme in a certain fashion. Together, as you read these and pray these hymns, they will stick in your memory as well, and it helps to go over them again and again to really draw and pull out some of the wonderful thoughts that are provided there. And in fact, you know, even if you're able to play an instrument and could play or accompany the hymns, sometimes even just praying them still the same, I think it allows one to be able to focus on the text in a different fashion. And so you're sort of coming at it from different media in different reading it, singing it, hearing it, and it'll help to embed it deeper into one's soul.
You mentioned in the last segment the simple orders of service that really are intended for small groups or the family. Talk about those daily prayer orders and how the family can use them and use the hymnal in its daily prayer life.
Sure. When we prepared a hymnal supplement about 8 years ago, we had pulled together these four little services, one's for morning, another for noon, early evening, and then at the close of the day. And we got the idea from the Book of Common Prayer. The most recent edition of that from 1979 has similar types of orders, and so we used that as a sort of a starting point. And in fact, when we prepared the hymnal, we made some revisions from what we had prepared in the hymnal supplement. What we've provided, it's just a very basic outline. We have a page of introduction to help people sort of have an idea how they could use this. And one of the things we provide in the introduction is a suggestion that as one prays each day for other people and other needs in the world, that one can actually develop a rhythm. And each day of the week, you might have certain topics that you're going to pray for. And we offer some suggestions in that regard. But then the services themselves, each one usually begins with some type of little responsive reading, usually from Psalms. So in the morning service, you have the invocation in the name of the Father and of the Son and of the Holy Spirit, Amen. And then three verses from three different Psalms. In the morning, O Lord, you hear my prayer. In the morning, I prepare a sacrifice for you and watch. The second one is, my mouth is filled with your praise and with your glory all the day. And then finally, O Lord, open my lips and my mouth will declare your praise. And so that's how the day would begin. And then there are suggestions, and this is very freely followed. You can do more or less depending on the time you have, perhaps. You could sing a hymn or a psalm. You can read a reading. We have some suggested readings appropriate for that time of day. But in the instructions, we suggest that if you maybe are following, if you're using the portals of prayer, a little devotion that's provided by our church body, you could use those readings and the little devotion that's provided there. We also have a daily lectionary here in the hymnal, which is just a listing of readings for every day of the year. One could follow that pattern for reading. There's all kinds of different options one can use. We suggest that a portion of the large or small catechism could be read at that point. Confess the creed, the Lord's Prayer, prayer for others, and then there's some two prayers that conclude, one of those being Luther's morning prayer. And so that's the basic pattern. For noon, the same thing. We have three psalm passages. We have a hymn, a reading. We include the Kyrie, Lord have mercy, Christ have mercy. And then we have Lord's Prayer, prayer for others, and a concluding prayer. And so all four of those little services are just are very simple. They're very flexible. You can you could do them in 5 minutes. You could spend 15 minutes. Depends how much time or how far you want to go with it.
Talk about the use of the of a Christian hymnal on Sunday morning, but before the service begins, either as an individual in church or perhaps even at home, preparing to receive the Lord's Supper.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's all kinds of approaches there. If one would just take the time and sit quietly and do that. What we did, we first thought, you know, it's useful. A lot of people have had the practice and have developed the piety of saying a prayer when they get to church or before they leave or before communion. So what we did is on the inside front cover, we as you open the book up, right there on the right-hand side of that inside cover, we have seven prayers for worship, one for entering the house of God, one before worship, one after worship, one before and after communion, and I think one before confessing one's sins. And so there we provided in a very convenient place several prayers that would be very appropriate to be used. We have that whole larger section of prayers that I mentioned earlier. I think there's 92 prayers in that section, and so a lot of opportunities there. One could take the service that's going to be used that morning, and you could look up the hymns and look through them. You can read the readings if they provided the text of the readings in your bulletin. You could go through the readings in advance so that you have a chance to begin to hear, you know what's going to be coming, and then you'll be able to listen with even more attention. There's all kinds of ways one could prepare. There's Luther's small catechism, we have, which includes sections on the Lord's Supper, of course, the questions that Luther provides. He also has the Christian questions with their answers, which are intended very much as preparation for communion. So there's all kinds of ways one could begin the process of preparing oneself for worship by looking through that book.
What about preparing for a practice that is still rare, but hopefully on the rise, restored to its ancient practice, and that is preparing for private absolution with the pastor?
Right. We have two services or rites here in the hymnal. One is called corporate confession absolution, and the other is individual confession absolution. The corporate one, of course, is the whole congregation could use it. It's in a more elaborate service of confession absolution that could replace the shorter form that's found in the beginning of our services. But the individual confession absolution, I mean, this comes from the small catechism. Luther had included a brief rite for confessing one's sins to the pastor. What we decided to do as we worked on the revision of this is that we decided we wanted to base it very much upon Luther's the rite that Luther had provided. So it's actually simplified from the forms we've had in the past.
By the way, I was just talking with one of the persons who sat on the earliest committees that were working on that service or that section mm-hmm. of the hymnal just last night, and I complimented him on the fact that the simplification vastly improves it takes away a lot of the scare factor from private confession and absolution.
Exactly.
By making it simple.
And what we tried to do with that, in this rite, in all the services you have what are called rubrics. They're instructions that are imprinted in red ink. And in all the services, those rubrics are always very impersonal. It's always third person. You know, the Kyrie may be sung, or it just goes on like that. For this rite, we did it very differently. We have the rubrics in the second person address. And so it begins, you may prepare yourself by meditating on the Ten Commandments. We indicate where those are found, or also pray the penitential psalms, and we list those. If you are not burdened with particular sins, you know, so all the notes are talking to the person, so it almost becomes a conversation as they read this, if they're using it in preparation. The other thing we did beyond simplifying it then was at the point where one has the opportunity to confess individual sins that are troubling that person, we don't require that you have to do that. And in fact, there's this section that begins where the person reads from here. It talks about, I, a poor sinner, plead guilty before God of all sins. I have lived as if God did not matter and as if I mattered most. That goes on. The last sentence is, my thoughts and desires have been soiled with sin. And then at that point, we indicate, you know, if you wish to confess specific sins, go on. And it says, what troubles me particularly is that, and then you have a dot, dot, dot. You fill in the blank. But the point we wanted to help people understand is that we don't intend, I mean, you may not, the first time you go to the pastor, you may not confess an individual sin, a particular sin. Too afraid to do it, perhaps. Will he keep the confidence that I'm trusting him with? And so it's we felt it was very important to provide a rite that would help people to see the benefit of taking advantage of this opportunity, but would not see it in any way as something that becomes coercive.
One of the hesitancies that I think modern Christians probably have, and it goes along with perhaps their phobias about hymnals too, is I mentioned it before. If it's printed in a book, it's gonna be stilted, and it's not really gonna be of good service to me. But talk about those printed prayers. Some of them profoundly ancient prayers. prayed by Christians for thousands of years and before that a Christian might find for his private devotional life in a good Christian hymnal?
Sure. The nice feature that we have with the prayers that we provide, and again, it's almost 100 of those, is that we try to cover just a wealth of topics, and this doesn't cover them all. That's for sure. We've got over 200 of them in the altar book that the pastor will be using. But what this does is it helps to give you language that you would just not think of on your own. And that's the same with the hymns, too, in a sense. I mean, sometimes the images, the ideas, just brief phrases sometimes that can just jog one's memory or catch your attention and say, oh, wow, I never thought of anything like this before. And that just becomes such a marvelous resource for, again, in a sense, beginning one's devotional life. This isn't the end of it. I mean, you might find a prayer here, you know, following a death of somebody's child, and it's just, you know, very challenging and troubling, and so you turn to a prayer that covers that. But, you know, your heart may suddenly be ready to pray even more on that topic, and as you struggle with whatever particular trouble there may be. And so these prayers become a marvelous resource.
Folks, we'll take your questions and comments on hymnals for the next 15 minutes with Dr. Paul Grimm. Our call-in number is 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. You can also email us here in the studio, issuesetc@kfuo.org. I'm Todd Wilkin. Issues Etc. is coming to you live this Wednesday, the 30th of August. Our guest, Dr. Paul Grimm. All right, let's do some more general things here as our time winds down, Pastor Grimm. You know, it's often said that if you go out to the store and buy yourself a computer, the latest, the greatest, the most advanced and fastest computer you can buy today, by the time you get it home and unpack it and plug it in, it's obsolete. But that doesn't stop you from using it for the next 5 or 10 years. Is the same kind of true with the hymnal? It's going to be, because it takes so long to put together and everything, it's going to be perhaps obsolete in some sense by the time it gets into your hands, but that doesn't stop you from using it. It's still very useful.
Right. A hymnal, by its very definition, and as it has developed over the centuries, it's never intended to be completely cutting edge. I mean, there is no such thing as a new hymnal, because hymnals grab many things that are very old and have been in one hymnal after another. I mean, the hymnal sort of represents the wisdom of all the ages of the church. As we have hymns and prayers from centuries past, from the present, and so it's not intended to be the most latest cutting edge in terms of technology. It provides a very solid resource as the place to turn for one's devotional life and for use in worship on Sunday morning. So the whole concept of cutting edge, just, you know, that doesn't come into play, at least in our thinking. Now, in much of the Christian music industry that we have in our country, I mean, the cutting edge is exactly what they're looking for, because they need to print every year another volume of resources that people will turn to, another recording of those resources, and then to print another one the next year so that you can keep ahead of the competition and be able to move forward. It's in some ways that's sort of the inverse of what we have sometimes with the struggle with hymnals, with people who aren't comfortable turning to a new book. They're very comfortable with the book they've known for 40, 50 years. Why do we need a new one? The hymnal you have indeed is still can serve you very well, but the truth is God has granted poets and musicians in recent years, too, of every age, he gifts his church with poets and musicians who provide, you know, that word of God in fresh garb as that message of salvation is put in new and wonderful ways.
Okay, so a mom or a dad listening to us right now plans to go out and purchase the new Lutheran service book, and they want to use it with their family in family devotions. Where should they begin?
I those four little services I talked about, I would certainly start there, because they are simple enough that it will be easy for children to pick them up. For example, if every morning a mother with her children, before she sends them off to school, or if dad's there, he can help too, be a part of it, would take that little morning devotion and use those three psalm verses that I mentioned with the responses. You know, over a period of time, those children, even very young ones, could pick those up. And that could become part of their prayer for that day. With regard to the catechism, I think that I would hope that families would use the catechism at home, especially with children, but even for adults too, to be able to rehearse those marvelous, those concise and insightful explanations that Luther gives to some very basic questions. For hymns, with children especially, you know, there are a number of hymns that have a refrain, And those refrains are a place, perhaps, to start for children. And there are a number of hymns that are very simple. They have simple refrains or just simple stanzas, and that's the place to begin. What it means, especially if you want those children to be able to participate, is you repeat them again and again. You don't just sing it once and you're done. You come back to it. You come back to it again. And it helps to really form deeply into their memory.
Our call-in number is 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727, our in-studio email address. issuesetc@kfuo.org. Let's talk with Ann, who's calling from Crestwood. Ann, welcome to Issues, Etc.
Hi, good afternoon. I'm coming in quite late to the discussion, so you may have covered this, but I don't think so. I'm a new Lutheran within the last 3 years, and I was very happy to come into hymnody, which wasn't anything like Shine, Jesus, Shine. But on the other hand, and the words are wonderful, and I think the hymns are Christ-centered and cross-focused, but my little tiny complaint is that there's always a line that is so high-pitched. They go up to high E, and almost, there's literally in my little tiny church maybe one lady that can sing that high. And I'm just wondering if the new hymnal will have hymns that are a little more singable. If that's a word.
There's some basic concerns there, Pastor Grimm,
for
being able to sing the hymns.
Right. Yeah, I mean, you know, especially if you're using the hymnal from 1941, many of the hymns were pitched higher. And in fact, if you go back 200-300 years earlier, all the hymns were pitched higher. I think they just were more tenors than sopranos. I'm not sure. But they just sang higher. And in the course of development of hymnal revisions over the last years, I mean, many of those hymns have been lowered, and we've done some more of that as well. I mean, it's not too often you go to high E, once in a while. But at the same time, you know, we have to be careful, because if you pitch a hymn too low, it might feel really comfortable for these low basses and altos, but children, for example, they really can't pitch sing a pitch below middle C with any without it sounding kind of bad. And so you have to be careful that we don't sort of pitch them out of singing the hymns too. But on the whole, those highly pitched hymns have been reduced. And in some cases, for example, in Lutheran Service Book, we provided hymns with two keys, and so that one could use either one or the other, and the musicians will be able to know where those are found.
You know what my wife asked me when I told her that I'd received the copy of the new hymnal at the office, and I had a chance to look through it. I told her this the other night. The first question she asked me is it as heavy as the last one? Did you guys weigh it?
Sure. I don't even know the exact weight on it, but I mean, that issue stems from the fact that when Lutheran Worship was published in 1982, there was a big outcry that it's such a heavy book, we can't hold it. And it was heavier than the previous hymnal. It's larger, it's taller and wider than the previous hymnal. And there's a reason for that. It's because it allows us to use a larger font size, which means you can see it better. And so people who say it's too heavy, as soon as you point out the fact, well, we can go back to the size of that before, but it'll be smaller print, you know, that quickly makes them realize, well, there are trade-offs. And so there are always trade-offs. We try to be careful, especially our concern was that it not be too thick, because the thicker it goes, the harder it is sometimes to fit in pew racks. And then that means you have to grab it harder and pull unfairly on it to get it out, and it can destroy bindings. So we tried to make sure it was not much thicker than the previous books.
Well, you know, the old saying is you can't tell a book from its cover, but I would like you, if you would, just to describe not only the image on the front of the new Lutheran Service Book, but the thought that went into it and the theological content in what someone finds just on the cover of this book.
Sure. Yeah, we decided we did want to be able to judge the book by its cover at least a little bit. Almost every hymnal has some type of cross design, and we indeed have a cross too. It's four arms, to equal length arms to the cross, often referred to as the Greek cross. But what we have also on the cover, on the front and in the back, is what's called a debossing. They made an imprint into the fabric. We haven't engraved it with the gold color inside there, but it's simply an indentation into the cover. And the symbolism on the front of the hymnal, it runs along the left side of the cover. There's two lines going down, and within those lines are the images of the Word of God, of baptism, and of the Lord's Supper. In other words, the means by which God brings us his forgiveness and life. If you go to the back side of the book, on the right-hand side, so it's just the reverse side of where it is in the front, two more lines going down, and within those lines are symbols of the Father, Son, and Spirit. You have the hand of God, you have the cross, and you have a dove. And they're, of course, defining what worship is all about. It's about worshiping one God in three persons, Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. And so right there on the cover, front and back, you begin to get a very clear indication of where the hymnal's going in terms of the content.
Okay, finally, make your pitch. Why should a person or a congregation consider purchasing the new Lutheran Service Book?
Well, I think if they give it a good shot to let, you know, let it speak for itself and really to examine it carefully, they'll see that, that we've tried to be very careful in what we've done here. Our goal was that this hymnal would become a worthy successor to both Lutheran hymnal and Lutheran worship, the two hymnals that are predominantly used in our congregations. There are people who have used one or the other for the last how many years, and they're very adamant about liking it. Some people don't like it, perhaps. But we tried to listen to both, you know, the complaints and also the desires of the church, and tried to prepare a hymnal that successfully integrates both of those. I think ultimately what I hope, you know, 10, 20 years from now, the realization that hits people is that more than anything else, this hymnal, it speaks and sings of Christ, and that his work on our behalf, that we might have life, is just, it's found all over the place. It's found with stunning texts, with images that are little sermons in themselves. And if people just give the hymnal timed and careful a careful hearing, that they'll begin to see just how focused it is on Christ.
Folks, you can find out more about the Lutheran Service Book on the web at cph.org, cph.org. That's the website for Concordia Publishing House, cph.org, or call them toll-free, 1-800-325-3040. 1-800-325-3040, you ask about the Lutheran Service Book, 1-800-325-3040. Dr. Paul Grimm is Executive Director of the Commission on Worship for the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. They just produced a new hymnal, the Lutheran Service Book. Paul, thanks for being our guest.
Thanks very much. I enjoyed it.
Well, Jesus says at one point in the Gospels, the good scribe, the scribe worth his salt, brings out of the storehouse treasures both old and new. That's what a hymnal is, essentially. Not reinventing the wheel every time you step into church on Sunday morning or every time you begin family devotions with your wife and your children, or your husband and your kids. Being the good scribe who goes into the storehouse and pulls out things old and new, all for the purpose of, whether you're at home with the family or sitting together with the family of God in church, all for the purpose of bringing the Word of God to bear upon the lives of sinners. That Word of God that communicates Jesus Christ and Him crucified for sinners. That's what makes the treasure, whether it's old or new, a treasure. Namely, what Christ has done for sinners. When we come back from this break, we've got Hour 3 of Issues, Etc. straight ahead. We're going to do audio open lines to begin. We'll hear a report from National Public Radio on the arrest of the leader of the Fundamentalist Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, Warren Jeffs. We'll also hear an ABC News interview with a former member of his cult. And then we're going to go a little more in-depth in the last half hour, talking with James Walker of Watchmen Fellowship about the Fundamentalist Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. Other than the polygamy, other than the multiple wives, other than the many children, other than the illegal marriage to minors, what's going on in the Fundamentalist Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, led by Warren Jeffs, just was picked up a day or two ago by the FBI. We'll talk about that on the other side of this break. It's audio open lines. In the third hour, our call-in number is 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. Tomorrow on the program, we'll talk about the church. Pastor Brian Wolfmiller will be our guest. Stay tuned.
Christ-centered, cross-focused. You're listening to Issues, Etc.